I hope this is the first of several meetings to be able to me to get to know you and for you to get to know me a little bit more. There's a lot of things to discuss just in Nigeria, and I'm very thankful that I came tonight and I saw all the young people and the people in the congregation here. I thought it was great that you came to hear about the Nigeria work, and then they told me about the dinner. So I don't know if you're here for the dinner, you know, or for the Nigeria work, but hey, I have a captive audience for just a few minutes. Tonight I want to talk to you about the work in Nigeria, but first of all, I want to start us off in the Gospel of Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. Now, the Gospel of Mark is interesting for several reasons. It's quickly becoming one of my favorite Gospels in the New Testament. The Gospel of Mark is a Gospel of action. Maybe that's why I like the Gospel of Mark so much, because it reminds me of the work in Nigeria. There is very little inaction in Nigeria. So much action going on. In fact, one of the key words in the Gospel of Mark is the word immediately. You'll notice it several times. In Mark chapter 5, we find three different stories. Now, why are those three stories there? The Gospel of Mark is interesting because Mark decided to, you know, not write his gospel chronologically, as in the events listed in the Gospel of Mark didn't necessarily happen one right after another, but Mark groups them together in order to prove a point. So when we come to the Gospel of Mark chapter 5, and we look at the three stories there, what is the point that Mark is trying to prove in the life of Jesus? If you start reading in chapter 5 and the verses 1, we have an interesting story about what? The Gadarene demoniac. Wow. Now that's your word for the day, right? The Gadarene demoniac. This guy who is possessed with, who knows, at least 2,000 demons. And we have the story about this man who is a danger both to himself and to others. So much so that the people of the community, they have to try and bind him and shackle him and chain him. And they try to do that for his and their protection. This man with the demons, he cannot be confined in such a way. And so we find our story with this man living where? In the tombs. Now, how many of you, right, live in a cemetery, right? Who would want to live in a cemetery? Anybody? Now, I have a, don't tell my parents I told you this story. I actually have a family story where my house was built in Mississippi, when I was, I think, about 3 months old. I was living in this house, apparently. But apparently the house I was living in at that time was an old cemetery, and there's some family ghost stories associated with that. But we often associate, you know, ghosts, bad things with cemeteries. In chapter 5, in their verses 1, he says, they, who is they? Where we're talking about Jesus and his disciples. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes or the Gadarenes, depending on your translation. And when Jesus stepped out of the boat, immediately, there's your word for the day, right? Immediately, that word of action in the Gospel of Mark. Immediately, there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs. No one could bind him anymore, not even with chains, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and he wrenched the chains apart and broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Now, I want you to key into that words there, no one. Who are those people, the no ones? Well, family, brothers, sisters, friends from school, maybe friends from work, people that knew him. Hey, a wife? Did he have any children? These are the no ones we're talking about who loved this man and tried to help this man but could not help this man. In fact, it says right there that no one had the strength to subdue him. No one else could help this man, this Gadarene demoniac. Wow. Let's call him Henry, okay? Let's call him Henry. No one else in town could help Henry. In verse 5, it says, night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was crying out and cutting himself with stones, which as we know today is a cry for help, is it not? In verse 6, and when Jesus saw him from afar, this man named Henry, he fell down and worshipped him. And you all know the story of how the episode happens, of how Jesus begins to talk with this man we call Henry. And in the due course, Jesus cast the demon out of this man we call Henry into 2,000 swine. Now, I lived in Africa for 5 years. I've been traveling to Africa for many years. And I know that, you know, a lot of Africans' wealth is tied up not in physical currency. A lot of it is tied up in livestock. How many of you are deal with cattle? What if you lost 2,000 swine? That's a major investment. These demons, they inhabit the swine, and they run down into the sea and are drowned, which is a terrible thing. That investment is gone. But let me tell you something. The demons are gone also. I want you to look and see what happens next. Skip down to verse 14. He says, the herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came and they saw Jesus and what? And saw the demon-possessed man that we call Henry. The one who had the legion. Listen. Sitting there. Clothed. And in his right mind. And they were afraid. Why were they afraid? Because they knew who this was. They knew his story. They knew his problem. They tried to bind him, but they could not bind him. And so now this man, whom no one else could help, is sitting there talking to this man named Jesus. And he's sitting there clothed in his right mind, talking like a normal person. They're afraid. Wow. Would you be afraid? If someone that you knew had all these problems, and then you see them and immediately you know that they're a different person, I think it would be a very astonishing thing. Just a few verses down, verse 17, they begin to beg Jesus to depart his region. I don't know why. You know, if I had seen that or I had experienced that, I would want to know more about it. But these people, they begged Jesus to leave. And so in verse 18, when Jesus is getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons, the one we call Henry, begged that he might be with him. Why? Well, for the obvious reason, first of all, you know, if you had been a participant in a miracle, you would want to see more of that, right? But also for the less obvious, where is this man going to go? He is a social outcast. He is the one that is living in the tombs. He is the one that's demon-possessed, you know, the one that no one else could help and do anything with. And so where is he going to go? To whom is he going to live with? And what is he going to do for a living? There's a lot of questions going on in this man's mind. So when he asked Jesus to go with him, what does Jesus say? Look at verse 19. He did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And so this man went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And everyone marveled. Think about that for just a few minutes. You understand that Jesus came across the sea. He came across the sea in a boat. And as soon as he got out of the boat, he went and dealt with this Gadarene demoniac. And as soon as it was over, what did Jesus do? He gets back in the boat and goes back across the sea. So I'm telling you, I want you to understand that the only reason that Jesus came over there was to help the man whom no one else could help. Wow. Jesus cared that much to go and help this social outcast. But then what did Jesus do with this social outcast? Look back in verse 19. Jesus says, "Go home to your friends and tell them what God has done." In other words, Jesus gave this man, whom we really don't know anything more about, Jesus gave this man the first great commission to go and to tell others what God has done for him. Sometimes we get scared in the United States of America. Sometimes we believe the lie in the United States of America. Sorry, I'm getting off topic here. But we have deluded ourselves in the United States by saying to ourselves, "Oh, it's just too hard. No one wants to listen. No one wants to listen to the gospel of Jesus Christ." And we've deluded ourselves into believing it. Three biggest problems in the church today is what? Starvation from the word. A feeling of apathy in the Lord's church, and cowardice among the brethren. So oftentimes we believe the lie that Satan is telling us. Oh, it's just too hard. No one wants to hear it. And yet when it comes to our missionaries, our mission points, I see you work in Honduras, I work in Nigeria. When it comes to our mission points and our missionaries, we expect to see what? We got to have reports with baptisms. We got to have reports with evangelistic works going on throughout your mission point. What are we doing in Northwest Arkansas, right? It's so easy to hold them accountable for doing evangelism. It's so much harder to hold ourselves accountable. Why? Because we have believed the lie. The three stories in Mark chapter 5 are all about one thing. It's all about Jesus caring for those whom no one else can care for. Tonight I want to tell you about a man who is doing a really good work. I met this man in 2003 when I went to Nigeria for the first time. I was a preacher in Northeast Arkansas and just finished school. I was there at the church for a year, and there was a little old lady there, was 65 years old. Her name was Doris Taylor. And she would go to Nigeria, 65-year-old lady. She would go to Nigeria for 6 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks at a time, living over there, teaching ladies seminars, doing Bible studies, doing a lot of really, really good work. But one year she came to me and she says, "Chad, I had surgery on my shoulder. Oh, Sister Doris, I'm sorry about that. She says, I need someone to go to Nigeria with me and carry my bags. I said, well, okay, I'll do that. That was back in 2003. And so I got involved in the work in Nigeria since then. And it was in 2003 when I first met Herbert Chukwu. Couple of real quick facts about Nigeria. Nigeria is a, now this actually, this slide is out of date because it says right there 190 million people. They actually came out with official figures this week. The population of Nigeria is 201 million souls. Now, if we keep on track, the United Nations says Nigeria, a country with the size of Texas and Oklahoma, will have more souls in that country by 2045 than the United States. So right now, Nigeria is the seventh most populous country in the world. And as it continues to grow and healthcare continues to get better, they're going to have better birth rates and their children are going to live longer, which means they're going to have more population in Nigeria than in the United States very soon. You know, have you ever been to New York City? Hey, I've never been to New York City. I've been to the airport. I don't count. You know, New York City, Google says, is a population of 8.1 million people. Lagos, largest city in Nigeria, population of right there, 21 million people. Almost three times the size of New York City. You drive along, which they have this main highway going along the kind of the heart of Lagos heading south, and it's going literally over a lake that separates the city of Lagos. And you look off to the right, and they have built this huge floating subdivision because there's no more land left. So they're building on the water now. So many people live in there, and 21 million people is the best estimate. Hey, there's another city just right over there, maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes down the road that you probably have never heard of, Ibadan, which is a larger population than just about any city in the United States. And I tell you what, there's a lot of souls and cities in this country. I want you to look at that right there. There was a missionary named Wendell Broom, who was an early missionary in Nigeria. He became a college professor, but he would go back to Nigeria and he would study every 10 years the Lord's church in Nigeria. And you know what he found? Every decade, the number of members of Churches of Christ and number of congregations of the Churches of Christ doubled every 10 years. Now you just imagine that for a minute. Now, I'm an Arkansas boy. I'm an Arky, you know. I'm from Paragould over there on the northeast side. There are 18 congregations. Well, sorry, there are now 17. One has closed up. There are 17 congregations of the Lord's Church in Greene County, which is my home county over there. Now, if you just imagine for a minute, let's apply that growth rate in Nigeria to the United States. That means that in 10 years' time, instead of 17 in my home county, there would be what? 34 congregations. And we're not talking about congregations of 15 or 20 folks. We're talking about at least a few hundred members in each congregation. These Nigerian brethren are on fire for the Lord, and they are doing such a good job. Herbert is one of those good guys doing a really good work. Now, this is Herbert standing outside. This is the guy that you support, standing outside a small rented room. I'm going to tell you about that in just a few minutes. He has a lifelong body of work for the Lord, and he is a trusted worker. You know, sometimes when you think of Nigerians, you might think, oh, Nigerians, you know. But this one here is a good brother in the Lord. This is one of the things I'm trying to get involved in. Herbert is active in a lot of different works, but this is one of those things that he is involved in. It's the Church of Christ in what's called Garrickey. Garrickey is a suburb of the city called Enugu, which is a big coal mining area. It was actually a former capital of the nation before they moved it around a few times. But Enugu is a city, the population of 3.2 million souls. Now, at one point, they had a non-cooperation brother go in there, and he taught a lot of the churches to be, you know, anti-cooperation. And so since a lot of them are anti-cooperation, they are dying out because they don't have any trained preachers to fill those pulpits, and those churches are not growing, just like the non-cooperation churches here in the United States. Herbert is going in there, and he is planting churches just like here at Garrickey to be able to reach out to that city of Enugu. He's also reaching out to those existing churches that are dying to reinvigorate them for the Lord. That is written on the wall of that church building. I don't know who wrote it or what it means. I just thought it was fantastic, you know. Now, that's the inside of the building there at Garrickey. Now, I want you to notice, I helped, me and Doris and some others helped put the money together to help purchase this land. And I think I helped raise some money about six or seven years ago, to help build some of this building. But a lot of that building was done by the Nigerian Brethren at the church, which is exactly what you want, partnership in that work. That's the front there, the pulpit there. Am I going the wrong direction? Oh, that's the outside of the building. Herbert would like to start a part-time school of preaching in this location. I want to talk about that part-time school of preaching for just a few minutes. Part-time school of preaching is a great avenue for training church workers. Unemployment is high in Nigeria. I don't know, remember how much it is. It's like 20%, something like that. What is ours? 3.6 right now. It's like 18 or 20% unemployment over there in Nigeria. And so if you have a job, or if you own your own business, a lot of people can't just close up shop for 2 years or 3 years or quit their job for 2 or 3 years and move to a traditional school of preaching, right? They can't do that. But they want to learn how to work in the church. And so I have set up part-time schools of preaching in Lagos, in Abuja. We have one in Ibadan, Nigeria. I've got another one going in on the east side of Tanzania. There's a lot of these part-time schools that meet on Friday nights, Saturdays, that allows the guys who have jobs or businesses to keep their jobs, but also train to be effective preachers and church workers in the church. He's wanting to do that there at Garrickey. I don't have the funding for that, but I do have the desire to do that. He's also providing preachers. He's wanting to train preachers to go back into these churches that are anti-cooperation and kind of bring them back along. It says right there, an empty lot besides the building. If you're looking at that building, on the left-hand side, there's an empty lot. Now, there are several things. There's a history to this building. I'm not going to bore you with it, but I will tell you that a man was killed inside that building. Why was that? Because Herbert at the time didn't have the funds to put walls, to put the steel door on there like he has now. At the time, he didn't have money for the steel door. Some thieves took this guy in there and killed him inside that building. That's no joke. So we try to make it a priority, get him some security up on there. We now have, which is a new thing, a preacher started in January of this year. I'm sorry, I forgot his name, but he's a good guy, and he is going to do two things. He's going to preach for the church, but also he's going to be a World Bible School follow-up worker, which is very important. I think your name is Diane. Yes, ma'am, is that right, Diane? Yes, no, oh, good deal. I think I was talking to Diane. She was a worker in World Bible School. World Bible School is a great tool for evangelism. I want to encourage you to get involved in that. Herbert, you know, he works a lot with this World Bible School follow-up. And this guy here, this preacher, he started in January. He's going to be working in Enugu trying to do World Bible School follow-up and trying to do some evangelism. And that baby, I wanted to show you that picture, that baby there. Normally, African babies do not take to me too well. Two reasons, right? Two reasons. Why? Because I have white skin and probably because I have a big belly, you know. So the African babies don't generally take me to me too well. But this baby, I'm telling you, she just thought I was fascinating. I think she's probably 4 or 5 months at the time. And I just held her the entire time. I loved it. Okay, Bible Study Center. I'm running late on time. Anyway, Bible Study Center. This is one of the things I really want to talk to you about. Now, Herbert is ahead of the game on this. Okay? I carried those 4 laptops over there. Those are 4 Chromebooks that I carried over there. They access the internet, of course. But what he's doing with those is he is allowing preacher students and World Bible School students to access their lessons on this computer, which that frees them up to be able to study more. And so he's doing it with Truth for Today out of Searcy. He's also doing it with World Bible School, and he's using this Bible Study Center. I would love, now that building you're seeing is basically a building probably, I'd say, probably the size of this platform to the benches here. And so he's got 4 laptops. He has a printer and he has a couple of desktops that only work if there's power. But I think this is a very innovative idea that we can put into major cities of Nigeria. We can put this simple model in many locations, allow people to come and study. Now, if you don't know it, this thing got a pointer. Yep. This lady right here, that is Herbert's wife. Okay? Herbert's wife is right there. Right? Just in case, ladies, you wanted to know that. All right. Okay, this is also important. You can't see that at all. Nothing. I thought it would look really stood out on my screen. This is a Thanksgiving service I went to in February. This was a 2-hour Thanksgiving service that I attended on a Saturday. And the purpose of it was twofold. One was to let the preachers that are involved with Herbert come and give their testimony about what's been going on in their area, kind of update Herbert and update me. But also the second thing that was really to try to reintroduce me into the work that Herbert has been doing. Herbert is planting and working with churches in 2 Nigerian states. I don't know how many churches he has helped to plant. But every time I travel with Herbert, even when it's on the other side of Nigeria, we're never in a village where he hasn't preached in. Right? Or he hasn't baptized somebody. The man is a great, great worker for the Lord. Herbert is active in planting churches in 2 Nigerian states. I want to tell you about this kid right here. This kid is an orphan. His parents died. And so Herbert has taken this kid into his own home. Even though Herbert's getting old, this man is going to raise this kid. And he's a really good kid. Herbert was trained at what's called the Nigerian Christian Bible College, which is about a 5-hour drive south of where Herbert's living at now. It was started in the 1950s, about 120 students right now. And so that's what Herbert got his training was at NCBC. A lot of more preachers are being trained, just like Herbert, to go out into the field of Nigeria. Tonight, Mark chapter 5 is about those 3 stories. About the gathering demoniac that we call Henry. It's about a man named Jairus and his daughter. And it's also about a woman with a flow of blood for 12 years. The common theme in all 3 of those stories is that Jesus is the only one that can help them. And just like the gathering demoniac, Jesus sent him out to go and tell others what Jesus has been doing. what Jesus had done in this man's life. Herbert is a man that's going out and doing great work for the kingdom in Enugu states, Kogi states of Nigeria. So I wanted to say two things. Thank you for sponsoring this preacher. He's doing a good work and worthy of the support. But number two, I want to encourage you to continue doing the support. This is one of the guys that we need to continue to be behind because he's doing the work. Tonight, if you are in need of prayers or if you need some encouragement or if perhaps you would like to rededicate your life and service to God, we want to give you that opportunity at this time at the song to come forward for prayers or for rededication, or if you have any need that the church can provide, please come forward as we stand and sing.